Okay, very welcome back to the programme. We'll be joined by our next guest shortly, but it gives us an opportunity to go through some of your comments coming in. Let's be honest, these killers of Sean Rooney will never face justice. Both sides want to annihilate each other. Get the UNIFIL Irish soldiers out before there's a lot more of Sean Rooney's. This operation of UNIFIL in Lebanon is an expensive sham with no positive outcome, believes a listener there. Just listening to the topic of children and play schools regarding nail varnish, I'm not sure about the play school setting in regards to whether it should be applied or not. I think that's a different topic, but as parents and adults, we need to remember most men, singers, some famous, wore nail varnish. It was a trend, not a girl or a boy or transgender thing, goths, etc. They've been wearing nail varnish for years and it was never discussed as a transgender topic. I think we're getting too hung up on all of this. Whatever your child is going to be, they're going to be. And why not let them have fun and explore in both a home setting and play school? We are only here for a short time, no matter what or who you are. I agree. I understand exactly where you're coming from. And again, I'm not pushing or anti any agenda whatsoever. But back in the day, you know, you're I know the people that you're talking of, the rock bands, David Bowie and what have you. You know, if they feminized themselves, it was seen as they weren't transgender, right? So that was seen as, I mean, people would be familiar with transvestism, if such a word exists. So they're two kind of different things. And it's very hard to separate them at the moment because of the national conversation that's happening in relation to transgender ideology. And we're hearing stories of, you know, men changing their gender and in women's prisons and women's spaces. Some people are concerned about people born male in women's spaces. So it's very pertinent at the moment. And it was inevitable, I think, when we started talking about this, that some listeners would make that connection because it's a very hot topic at the moment. Should children not be taken to see pantomimes because they would see men dressed as women and vice versa? Yeah, indeed. That's another thing, though, that feeds into the controversial issues I was talking about just before I read that text. So basically, we've just made up 72 genders. I heard protected in legislation. Just waiting on. But you see, they're not protected in legislation. The legislation, again, and I'm just trying to come from all of these arguments. What the legislation says that if someone wants to identify as, I don't know, a table, right? You know, I'm not being disrespectful. What it means is that you can't hate on them just because of that. You could say it is absolutely stupid. It's ridiculous. What are you doing? The world's gone mad. This should not be allowed. People like that should get help. You can say all of that. But what you can't do is you can't go up to them and you can't say you're a this, that, blah, 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 and you're clearly a something or other because of your gender. So that's what it means. If that goes too far, that's fine. It doesn't recognise 72 genders. It recognises that there are more genders than male and female. So you can get your senators, they'll put a figure on it, 72. You can get a minister puts a figure on of 9. But the bottom line is it's infinite. It's any number over 2 is the truth. The legislation is set out as such that it's any gender at all, yet to be invented. So I'll read this text in its full in its fullness. So basically, that person's not in just yet in case you want to chase that up. So basically, we've just made up 72 genders. I heard protected in legislation. Just waiting on a court case from some offended gender to come along to decide who can say what anymore. No one is looking at the feature anymore. The conversation you just had about kids in play schools may well become a thing of the past because once it's protected, you're basically silenced. But you're on. The thing is it's demonstrably not true that you're silenced because you can say whatever you like. You can have an opinion on whatever you like, but you can't, you cannot cross the line based on someone's gender, their sexuality, their disability or what have you. So what people who are opposed to this seemingly want to be able to do is break the law in addressing someone, really, because that's the only thing you can't do. As I say, this came in Scotland. Everyone thought it would mean this, that and then. Bottom line is you can say whatever you like, but there also has to be a crime attributed to the words before it can even be progressed. Hi, Greg. In relation to the nail polish issue, honestly, with all the horrible things happening in the world, getting upset over a little boy wearing nail polish definitely shouldn't be high on the priorities. If my son came home with nail polish, I'd ask if he liked them and say they look lovely. Such a silly thing to get upset over. I'm a 66-year-old man. At 5 years old, a teacher put bows in my hair. I paid no heed at the time, but got a lot of slagging from other pupils. To me, the child will get some abuse from this. Teachers should not do that to 4 or 5 year olds. Now, this is in a childcare setting where there is an innocence that I don't think would lead to bullying. Now, if we were talking about in primary school, I think... I've never forgotten the mockery, though, this listener says. I was subjected to by older students. Teachers should think how this will make kids view other kids. Time to reset the button and start with the old normal. Are you saying switch 2024 off and on and see how we get on? Is that what you're suggesting there? In regards to the nail painting of play school, if my child came home and told me they weren't allowed to take part in something because of their gender, I would feel so sad for them and be really annoyed. At the end of the day, it is the adults making this into something that it isn't. Children are playing and exploring their world. Let them be children. Interesting comment too there, which kind of has me thinking. Right, we are joined on the programme now by Dr. Conor Mitchell, who's the lead GP, Community Healthcare Network Office, Sligo, South Donegal. Good morning to you, Doctor. Thanks so much for your time.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Good, good. Now, a conversation today in various elements has been, you know, talking about the welfare of our children, and we're continuing in that vein, really, because the HSE is urging parents to ensure children are up to date with their vaccines ahead of midterm break. So why particularly at this time of year is it timely to put this information out there?
It's timely because, firstly, we've finally got the vaccines in, okay? Flu, as we should all be aware, is a serious illness, and it can be especially dangerous in children. We know that children are twice as likely as adults to catch the flu and can spread flu easily. Children are more likely than adults to be very sick from flu. The main groups of patients that end up in hospital are children and then the elderly as well. Okay, so vaccinating children protects them, protects their siblings, protects their parents, their grandparents, and those who are vulnerable in the community. Children are much more likely to spread the flu virus in the community. So if we can vaccinate children, reduce down that spread, we reduce then some of the pressures on the health service in different areas, whilst also protecting children as well.
Just in relation to the flu vaccine now, yep. It has been designed that it's needle-free, prick-free. Children can get it up the nose effectively.
It is. It's a nasal vaccine. So it's what we call a live attenuated vaccine. It's two little sprays of both nostrils with one vaccine. It's been used for decades in the United States and in other European countries, and has been proven to be highly safe.
Is it likely to, and effective, I think I talked over you when you said that, after a child gets the free nasal spray flu vaccine, are they likely to have a little spike in temperature, feel a little bit unwell or anything?
Yeah, a little bit like all vaccines, we can have some side effects from them. The nasal vaccine is no different. We can have some mild malaise, an increased temperature, some nasal symptoms, feeling a little bit off, but these symptoms should really resolve in 2 to 3 days, or 1 to 2 days, really, okay? In very rare cases, there can be more severe side effects, okay? But once again, these are extremely rare.
In relation to RSV, who can get the RSV immunization and why should they?
So the RSV vaccine is being brought out and is being expanded upon in the community, and it's now part of our childhood vaccine. Why should RSV? Because RSV can cause what's called a bronchiolitis. It can cause different medical illnesses. And it, once again, it leads to increased hospitalization for our young patients. Young patients are more vulnerable to these viruses and can become much sicker with them.
And is RSV at this stage most likely to be offered to newborns? And the parents make a choice at that stage. So your appeal is to say accept the offer of the RSV immunization. There's no catch-up or anything like that out in the community.
No,
broadly.
There's no catch-up.
So if you're due to have a baby or about to have a baby, and babies can be particularly vulnerable to this, especially premature babies, but not exclusively.
I think it's important to reiterate then as well to pregnant mothers, there is also the whooping cough vaccine as well. There's the flu vaccine for them as well. whooping cough vaccine protects baby from whooping cough after they're born. You know, we're all struggling kind of what's called in the healthcare field at the moment with kind of increased numbers. We're reading about it every day in the newspapers about hospitalizations and everything else. This is one way that we as a community, as a society, can decrease that need by reducing down viral loads in the community, by reducing down viral spread. And vaccines are one of the best ways of doing that.
From a medical perspective, I completely get it. From a PR perspective, not quite as much, although it's very important, and we can tease that out, to group COVID-19 vaccination in with flu and RSV, because I think there's a lot of acceptance that you know, the flu vaccine is tried and tested. The RSV is proven as well, but there's still quite a bit of controversy over COVID-19. But what are what's your views in relation to the vaccination of children with that vaccine, and which children?
With COVID, so really we're looking at children who have an increased medical need and who are what's called in the cohort in which it's in which COVID will potentially produce the most symptoms and lead to higher hospitalization rates and higher morbidity and mortality in those patients. So we're really recommending what's called, you know, for those patients to go ahead.
Okay.
And vaccinate.
Port of call GP, is it?
Sorry?
The port of call is your GP?
Port of call, well, there's three real areas. So GP, pharmacy, or school. There are school vaccination teams as well going around. So it might be worthwhile talking to your school to see if that's a possibility. Otherwise, many GP surgeries are running vaccination clinics, many pharmacies as well. Main thing is it's free, it's easily available, there's plenty of stock. Okay, so these are all issues when COVID was rampant where stock was an issue. Okay, at the moment, there's plenty of stock in the community.
And just in relation to the flu, I presume for the child flu vaccine, this nasal free spray, the free nasal spray, sorry, it's the same as the traditional one in that this is changes annually, doesn't it? It's formulated maybe on trends that we've seen in the Southern Hemisphere previously, and that allows us to know what's going to come here?
Exactly. That's exactly what's happened is they've looked at trends, what's called 6 months out, found what viral strains they believe are going to be spread and the most virulent and the most can have the most danger to our patients, and they're the ones that have been formulated to be included in these vaccines. Even what's called vaccination with these strains can reduce down your susceptibility to other strains as well, which is really important to get. You know, we often hear about people picking up maybe illnesses after having the flu vaccine and its efficacy, but actually your question is, it's a more than likely, it's a reduced response after that flu vaccine.
Very finally, Adahi commented, they want to poison kids' immune systems. There are natural, more natural therapies. Just from my perspective, before I get you yours, I mean, let's not forget there was a very high morbidity rate amongst children with lots of things through the generations. Now we have medicine to help offset some of that. But also, you know, I've had very young children suffering the impacts of some of these conditions. It's not very, very pleasant, and I would do anything to try and avoid it. And I'm thinking of the RSV vaccine particularly in there as well as the flu vaccine.
I completely agree. I have three children. I've had my son in Sligo Hospital on a ventilator at one stage, on oxygen nasal drip at another for a different viral illness. I would look at anything to try and avoid that situation and try to avoid...
Especially tried and tested.
...having to go through that again.
Especially tried and tested systems. Okay.
And that's the thing. These vaccines are tried, they are tested, they are recommended by the WHO. There's plenty of supporting material behind them.
Is there a particular issue with whooping cough at the moment? Someone saying they're of the impression that there are high levels of cases in Donegal at the minute. I'm not sure if you have that data in front of you.
I don't have that data in front of me at the moment, but I would imagine that with the schools going back and with creches back as well, that what's called viral illnesses have increased.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much indeed for your time. Take care of yourself. I do appreciate it. That was... Dr. Connor Mitchell, and as I say, look, at there's controversy around certain vaccines, but there's others that have been there for ages, and I understand my concern is, and sometimes I have the concern myself, my vaccine hesitancy in one area, not for it to overlap into another that could end up with me in hospital with the young fella or one of the young fellas or something along those lines. Ask that man to send a dentist to the schools and forget about the vaccine. Well, we shouldn't forget about the vaccines necessarily. He's not responsible for dental practices in schools. That's something we've covered quite extensively. An awful lot of young people are missing out on checkups and what have you in the schools. And what's happening is because they're not fixing that problem, you can't get a dental appointment, but you can get an appointment to get your tooth pulled out. Right? We should be doing everything we can to protect children's teeth for as long as we possibly can. But unfortunately, the system doesn't seem set up like that. Our focus now is Skullmore and Milford. And we've two guests in studio with us. We've got Father Stephen Gorman, who's chair of the board of management of Skullmore Milford. Good morning, Father.
Good morning,
Thank
Greg.
You very much. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
And Louise McLarnon, who's drawn the straw, I believe, and is coming in speaking to us on behalf of the Milford Parents Association. Right, so, and this whole conversation really is all about the need for a new primary school in Milford. What is there at the moment is not suitable. It's not fit for needs. It's not suitable for the students. I presume it's not suitable for the teachers. And I presume the parents would love to see improvements there. Yeah. So, Louise, if you don't mind, I might start with you and just give us a sort of an overview of the school and why it's so important that it is replaced.
Good morning, Craig. First, I would just like to point out that we're blessed with the staff that we have in the school. Our children are nurtured and cared for in every way. They do an immense amount of good work with the facilities that are there, even though the school is in a complete and utter state of dereliction. For example, our students are being taught in classrooms of sizes of 49 square metres, and the current standard classroom being built today is 80 square metres.
No.
They're also being taught in overcrowded areas such as corridors, storerooms. We have...
Whoa, let's not rush through this.
Yeah.
Because this is really quite significant. And I think particularly off the back of our last conversation about the spread of infection and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
As you say, the staff are having to work in very difficult situations, but the school rooms are cramped, and the other areas of the school, such as halls and what have you, they're having to be used as actual teaching spaces.
Yeah, from time to time. One storeroom has now been converted into a full-time classroom.
Right.
We had one small hall that would be classed as a recreation area, which the children used to be able to use for on rainy days for PE. That currently is holding four support teachers, teaching a number of students at any one time. So it's divided into four by just small partitions.
And am I right in saying some of these rooms that children are being taught in actually don't have windows?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, from time to time.
From time to time. Or if they do have windows, they're extremely high up and can't be accessed to be opened. Or if they are opened, they can't be accessed to be closed.
Yes. Now, also, let's not forget that this school was built in the 1950s. That's almost 75 years
ago.
So we're in a very different space down the line. And I'm going to bring Father Stephen in a moment. I just want to the picture painted from a parent's perspective. So then when it comes to, say, for instance, bathroom breaks or toilet facilities, what's the situation there?
We have 219 pupils accessing a small number of toilets, in different areas of the school. They have no running warm water. We have 33 staff, and that doesn't include visiting staff like nurses and educational support staff, and they have one bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So 33 permanent staff with one bathroom.
One toilet. It's just a toilet and a sink. It's not like... There's not a proper washing facility. There's no shower. It's very primitive, Greg.
Yeah.
Extremely primitive.
Just back to facilities then. Let's talk about outside space, because we know how important it is for children. Firstly, I think they should be able to see outside whilst they're inside. But anyway, then in terms of sort of outdoor facilities, because in getting more accommodation, it's eaten into already limited outdoor space. Right.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
So we were awarded two modular classrooms last year. One is a mainstream classroom and one is an autism classroom. Now, while this was welcomed, it actually ate into our very sparse recreation area.
Mm-hmm.
We have no grass area for the children to play on. Breaks have to be staggered. When the children are allowed out, they're playing on rough tarmac. So you can imagine kids playing football. There are daily falls, daily tears, daily splits, daily cuts. So there is no space to move any more accommodation of classrooms onto our area, given the fact that we are already cramped and the recreation space that they have outside is virtually non-existent, and the fact that breaks have to be staggered is also
and it's a landlocked, chaos for like the site itself, Greg, is it's landlocked. So it's less than a 2 acres and there's nowhere to extend. And even the play area for the children, it's sloped and it's tarmacked. It's that kind of a rough gravel.
Yeah.
And like we're the whole time, you know, like our first aid kit is probably one of the biggest expenses, you know, because they're like young fellas and young girls want to play football and different things like that. We have no green grass.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
So Father Stephen Gorman, then, in terms of options, okay, and we're going to speak about, because you have had quite senior politicians out on site, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of, you say it's a landlocked, limited site. Mm-hmm. So what are the development opportunities? So if, say, for instance, development was green lit, it wouldn't be built in the current site, or what's the solution there? Does the site have to be acquired?
We are very fortunate, Greg, that an offer of a site has been made to the Board of Management, okay? But that offer is not going to last forever, okay? So we have been offered 5 acres of prime development land to build a new school at no cost to the Department of Education. So
the land has been gifted?
It's been gifted.
Wow.
So that has been gifted to...
What a head start.
So, Greg, just to give a bit of thing, I have met the Minister for Education twice, okay?
Norma Foley.
Yeah. Norma Foley has come to the school in Milford. She visited the classroom that has 4 teachers teaching. And, Greg, the funny thing is, that partition, we use the polling booths to divide up that room.
Like, what was her reaction to that?
Oh, she wanted to get out of the room very quick. She didn't. She just turned and got out. And then we showed her the other classrooms. Were like, we have one classroom that's only 29 metres squared and there's 15 children, a teacher and an SNA in that room. Like, Greg, it's around the same size as this room that we're in now. It's beyond belief what is going on in Milford.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm on the board for the last 6 years. I've been 6 years in Milford.
Mm-hmm.
Louise has been on the Parents Association for 8 years. We have been working with the Department of Education for this proposal for a new school for Milford. They know that, like, they know my name, they know about the Board of Management. We have met with the Minister for Education as early as May of this year when she was in Letterkenny again, and they kept saying to us, the big block in Milford is that you don't have a site. Mm-hmm. We told them in February of this year, we have been gifted a site and we are not getting anywhere because the Minister is not listening to us, or it's fallen on deaf ears.
Mm.
Like, she's really just not.
But she's not the first minister. I mean, that's not the first minister she's engaged with either. I mean, we did have a Donegal-based education minister, let us not forget.
Yeah, and we met with Minister Joe McHugh as well. He had also visited the school and he passes our school on a daily basis to go to his own hometown in Carrigart. But, like, I have been working with all the political parties on this. Like, we got this issue raised in the Senate. We got it raised in the Dáil. We've been working with retired members of the Oireachtas. You know, we've been working with anybody that is willing to hear us out and to try and push our cause for a new school. But it just seems that the Minister for Education is not listening to our situation. She has seen it for herself. She knows that we now have a site and this is our opportunity now, Greg. We're not going to sit back any longer.
Yeah, the patience has run out by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
I never realised the scale of the school, the amount of staff and students. What about when it comes to lunchtime or what have you? What happens in that situation?
Well,
it's also staggered breaks. They have to...
Well, give the idea of the staff room.
The staff don't have anywhere to go. The staff room has, where we have our Parents Association meetings also, has virtual holes in the floor. The floorboards are rotten. There is one which you would describe as a kitchen table, which will seat 8-10 at a squeeze for 34 staff. The kids have to have staggered breaks, so they're given a minimum amount of time to eat their lunch. So there are days where the lunch comes home, and why is it home? Because we didn't have time to eat it. Because they have to eat theirs and get outside to allow the others to eat theirs so they can get outside. So they're back in before the others are allowed back out. So it's very much...
It doesn't... It also sort of seems to be anti where we're going at the moment. It's separating children, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel right, does it, that you've got children there that won't interact with other children purely because of the way things have to be staggered.
Yeah, and it's It's a shame, and it's not fit for purpose, and it's a shame. And our children are happy children, but they know no better.
But Greg, you know, we've even had to separate the, like, so the school gate opens onto a road.
Yeah, we're looking at it here for those watching the program. Yeah,
yeah. There's not even a footpath outside the front door of the school. So we've had to actually stagger some of the leaving times for the pupils as well, so that we are trying to make it safe. Like, I have given a list. The Garda and Garda Síochána have been informed many times of people being knocked down and different things that have been happened with children outside of the school. One of the superintendents said to us, and I quote, he says, "The current location of the school in Milford from a road traffic safety viewpoint is questionable."
I think he's been quite reserved in that commentary looking at it here.
You know,
both of you, stay right where you are if you don't mind. I'll try as best as possible that you can listen to this next commentator, but I won't get you to put headphones on. Okay. Sheila Friel, former teacher, deputy principal and parent of five children who went to that school and knows all about this for a very long time. Sheila, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Father Stephen. Good morning, Louise. Greg, thank you for speaking to me.
How far back does this go, Sheila?
It goes back to 1959 when the school opened. The school, in 1955, the parents in Milford went on strike and removed the children from school because of the poor sanitation and the rats and all of those problems. Eventually got a new school in 1959 with three classrooms and two cloakrooms. And from the day and hour it opened, the school was too small. And they eventually, in 1966, they got one extra classroom, which is what the main building now consists of, four rooms. And they got toilets added on. The school, that was in 66. In 1970, two classrooms had to be sent. Sorry, in 1959, classes had to stay in the old school. In 1970, two classes had to be sent to the Milford Hall, the parochial hall, and they were taught there for a year because there was no room. Carnaganahan School had closed, and 13 children and a teacher came from Carnaganahan to Milford, so the school ended up too small. Two classes were taught there. However, because the conditions were obviously not ideal, in the supper room in the hall, parents again withdrew children from the school or from the hall, and they were then squeezed back in and ended up being taught in a cloakroom. Now, whatever you might accept that in 1970, this is 2024, and children are back being taught in small areas. As Louise and Father, I mean, I'm only reiterating, as a parent, obviously, I had five children through the school in that time, kind of in the 80s and 90s. In 1992, I was the parent's rep on the board of management. I was teaching myself in Strabane at the time, and I actually, dare I say it, I took a day off to go to Dublin with the board of management. And Father Seamus Gallagher, the late Father Seamus Gallagher, who was the priest at the time, Martin McGonigal, who was principal at the time, the late Frank Hannigan, who was the bishop's rep, and myself went to Dáil Éireann. Liam Aylward, we met, who was junior minister. We eventually, out of that meeting, eventually in 1996, the sixth class and the multipurpose room were opened. But the multipurpose room was too small then, and it's too small now, and as Louise and Father Stephen have said, it's being used as classrooms.
Just one
and
thing
actually,
before I let you go, too. Yep. I mean, obviously, the new curriculum it would be hard, particularly in the area of maths. The facilities don't permit the curriculum to be used as designed.
Although I've retired, I work part-time with Hibernia, the teacher training college. I'm actually heading into Ardra at the moment on the road to visit a student. Now, these students are being trained in the new curriculum. I'm being trained in the new curriculum. It's a very practical curriculum. Most of the school curriculum now is very practical. A lot of people who haven't been in school for years still think that school is you sit on a seat from 9 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock. No, you don't. Children now are allowed to move. It's a child-centred curriculum. And therefore, you need space. You need space to let them move about. You need space for them to change. They don't work with the same people or the same group all the time. They move from groups to groups. They're meant to be stations and areas set up, reading station, a writing station, an area maybe where you do poetry or you do a bit of art. There's no room. As Louise said, some of the classrooms in Milford are 49 square metres. They should be 80 square metres. They're tiny. They're so old-fashioned. The staff, the facilities. I mean, when I left Milford, the staff room was too small. And it was a staff room that Martin McGonagall, due to him, had added on. It was just built, and it was built by local men. It was added on separate from the building. It was far too small. The staff has tripled since I left. And excellent staff. The staff and the teaching assistants and the principal in Milford School are par-bar. They are the top of the top. They really are. They're exceptional staff.
Sheila, listen,
and they deserve...
I beg your pardon, sorry.
They deserve better.
Of course, and thank you for making that point. And it's amazing, actually, really interesting to get the history of that, Sheila. Thank you for that. Enjoy the rest of your day. I do appreciate it. Now, for those watching, we're looking at some images here, which are, my guests in the studio can't see, but it's of the classrooms, and they are recent pictures, and these spaces are incredibly cramped. I'm looking at the partition there, but that has some of these rooms are partitioned. It's not an environment where we get the best of our young people, I'm afraid.
No. Like, it's not, Greg, it's not good enough. Like, it's like I have been, you know, journeying with the Department of Education for 6 years, but my predecessors have been also doing this. Like, we have reached the end of the line. The Parents Association has said, right, we are going to this is another step. We're not going away. Mm-hmm. We are going to get this school. The minister needs to start listening.
Well, we have a minister in this county. Have you managed to secure a meeting with Minister Charlie McConnell Logue?
Yes.
I'll ask you, Louise.
Thankfully, this morning, Minister McConnell Logue's office came back to us.
Oh, wow.
And said,
and when did you request that meeting?
We actually requested the meeting on Monday of this week.
Okay.
Or Friday it was.
Friday
it was
last
after
week.
A meeting on Thursday,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, and this morning you got notification.
So this morning the email back to say that we will have a slot with him tomorrow. The representatives will have a slot with him tomorrow at 3:45. So we're hoping.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, we're very grateful for that. And we're hoping that, you know, maybe he'll be able to understand the issue a little bit better and he will help us get some resolve.
Brilliant, because he's made some good announcements about schools in recent times.
Yeah.
Let's hear a parent's perspective. Maggie Y. Donald, thanks for your time today.
Maggie Y. Greg, good morning to Louise and Father Stephen.
You're a parent, so you know all about this. What's your assessment of the school? And I think we can all agree, teachers, management, they're doing a fantastic job in difficult circumstances. But from a facilities perspective, Donal?
Well, I think that's the complete common thread that we have throughout this. The magnificent and amazing staff that we have within the school at the moment, and the job that they are doing under such horrendous cramped conditions is just second to none. And the campaign that they, you know, that we're involved in now, and seeking a new school for the children is has to be paramount. As you know yourself, possibly from passing up and down, that it's located at the very corner on a main road. There's secondary schools within the close proximity as well. You have wholesale premises up on the same convent road there as well, and there's just a mass amount of congestion at various times. As been stated, the facilities are so outdated for what's needed in today's age. And I would just be calling now in the throes of a general election for our elected members and the government parties that we currently have in government to fully step up to the plate and deliver a new school for the people of Milford and the children and what's needed. And just to completely compliment again the staff and Principal McCrae and all the people that are there working diligently, and what they are providing and giving to the children is second to none in such horrendous conditions. And I suppose it's until you see what they're actually getting on a daily basis and not knowing how difficult it is to give the level of standard of education that they are given. This is what's so unique about what we have within the training staff within the National School.
And I think, too, the message here, Donal, is that, you know, and I'll say goodbye to you, Donal, actually. Thank you so much for so much for that insight into it. But I think, and I'll put this to Louise and Father Stephen here, I think the message here is that there's been periods of patience that parents have had, and then they came to a tipping point. And we heard from our caller before last that the action has been taken in the past. We're not maybe necessarily there yet, but whatever patience has existed heretofore, Father Stephen, that has now been exhausted.
Yeah.
This is a tipping point.
Here. Like, just there in the last couple of weeks, the staff have came to me and said, listen, Father Stephen, we are at the end of our tether with us. Like, you know, we know that they know that I've been fighting for them, trying to get this new school. So I said to them, well, I says, if you want to do something, you can. So they wrote their own letter to Minister Foley outlining how bad things were. They says, on the first thing they said on there, one thing they said, we have one staff toilet in our main building. We have 40 minutes for our breaks daily. And for many, much of their break is used queuing for this facility. Like, Greg, it's in this day and age, you know, people coming to work, men and women coming to work, having to queue for a toilet. You know, like, they have 33 members of staff. They don't have adequate parking facilities around the school, with secondary schools situated on either side of them. 219 children trying to get into the school. They said there's no hot water for the toilets, even for the staff to wash their hands. No running hot water in the school.
Mm-hmm.
The hall or the multi-purpose room is for four teachers. Like, if you imagine that you're trying to teach three or four children that you've brought out of a classroom into this, and then you can overhear the other three teachers teaching, like, that's very frustrating.
And this is also the room as well, as Father Stephen, that the SNAs would use for OT therapy with their students. It's the room...
Photocopying?
Yeah, at the same room it's also supposed to be.
Art supplies, it's also the library.
It's also the quiet space for SNAs to bring their children when they need... You know, sometimes children with additional needs just need their quiet space. They don't have that.
Yeah, listen, the iron is currently hot, right? Mm. So there is an election. I think what can the wider population Milford do? They can make sure if anyone calls round to the house, that this is who's raised. Ask directly, what are you going to do about this school? Secondly, of course, too, on election day, I think there's something of a... there's something of a silent protest.
There is going to be a silent protest. The Parents Association, Louise, are organising that.
We don't want, you know, we're not looking for an argument. We're not looking for a fight. We just want, you know, in this day and age, we want what is right for the kids in the school. 8 years I've been a member of the Parents Association, and 8 years this has been kicked down the line. We've now been gifted a site, which is an ideal location. The site's not going to be there forever. We need to act.
Sorry,
now.
I'm distracted here. I'm watching a video of that someone sent in to us of the school, and with the best will in the world, the kids are jam packed into there.
Oh.
And if the truth be told, there's probably only the space for the furniture in those rooms.
Absolutely.
The kids are actually the excess.
Yeah.
That is not a suitable environment. And looking at some of the other rooms, long rectangular rooms, that's not a pleasant environment.
No.
As hard as you might try, it's amazing when you actually see something. It's amazing how it becomes more apparent. Rooms not fit for purpose either. Go ahead, Father. I was just taken aback by the actual video.
Oh, like, Greg, it's like people just want to understand how primitive this is in like 2024. Like on this letter that the staff wrote to the Minister for Education says, we feel that our current school is hindering our abilities as a staff to educate our children. Mm-hmm. Like for that to be said in 2024. And they said that they don't even feel that they're able to support each other. And they says, we plea with you, Minister, to consider our application.
Mm.
And we are just hoping and praying that the Minister for Education will hear us and listen to us. Because, you know, we are getting nowhere, Greg. It is just, it's shocking.
And also I'd like to point out, if you were in a private working sector and you were told that you're going to come to your work on a daily basis, share a toilet with 34 of your colleagues, male and female, with no hand washing facilities other than cold water, and nowhere to have your lunch or your breaks, or if you wish to have it, you're going to have to stagger your
children. Yeah, and I would say too, in terms of accessibility for children with additional needs, there's an awful lot of steps and drops. And I mean, how that building is not an inclusive building.
No, absolutely not.
Despite the best will in the world.
There isn't even an area for an ambulance to pull up at that school.
No. Yeah, 42 boys, 3rd, 5th and 6th. So I'm watching a room here that's split up, as you said, with the elections things. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And we use the election. So when people go in to vote, the polling booths, we're using the polling booths to corner off the room. And then we're using the library books as well to hold, you know, for, to kind of segregate off. Segregate the room into four.
And also in there, there's facilities the teachers use, i.e. photocopiers and what have you, in this same room.
And in the corner of that room, there's a sensory room.
Yeah. And the outdoor facilities are pure crap. Pardon my father. Excuse me.
Greg, you're forgiven
today. Will you give me a pass on that one, Father? I'm sorry.
But Greg, we're going to tell you this. We got an ASD unit, two modular rooms, okay? So we have six pupils in there. We've had to refuse pupils over the summer months. We can't even start a waiting list. We need a second unit.
Mm-hmm.
The demand is so good. So the problem is now we have some children that have a brother or sister in a different school because we are not able to facilitate them.
Yes.
And
that's very disruptive.
It's very disruptive.
It's really horrible for the young
ones. You know, this wonderful autism modular room that is there, and we're turning away siblings from, you know.
You can't make that make sense.
There's something seriously wrong.
So I'm not sure which one of you will commit to it, but you have a meeting with Minister Charlie McConnell tomorrow.
Yeah.
I would love to get an update on that. Maybe we might wait till Tuesday. Yeah. I don't know how we'll do that. But just in case he needs to go and check stuff, and we give adequate time, all we want is a good news story, isn't it? We'll celebrate and that as much as we'll highlight something that needs fixed. If we can get positive news on this,
brilliant.
We'll love that too. School is not fit for purpose. My child's currently in the storeroom, which is a sentence I never thought I'd read in 2024 in the Western world. School is not fit for purpose. My child's currently in the storeroom as a classroom. He often comes home saying that someone has been injured on the tarmac from playing. It's an extremely dangerous spot with traffic, and we feel as parents, until something serious happens, nothing will be done. And so many of the topics we talk about in this programme, why are we going to wait till something serious happens?
Something serious has happened.
Yeah.
A device, whenever these modular buildings were being dug out,
an exploded device was found.
Yeah. And they want us to dig up that same ground to put in more modular buildings.
And take away all our yard space. And we refused to take, because that means that children would not be able to go outside.
And the parents have very...
cannot accommodate.
No.
That's the when the Parents Association had to have
The site enough. Cannot accommodate any more modular buildings.
And then they said, we asked them, could we get the current site scanned? You know, and they said there's nothing in Ireland or the UK to scan the ground for any more devices.
Right, listen, I do have to take a break now because we've ran on a little bit. But we'll keep an eye on this. Looking forward to news from that meeting tomorrow. Yes. Hopefully it's positive. I can't see any further argument that could be made to prove that a new school is required. And as well, you know, the big thing here is someone has gifted land. Now, that's complicated because stuff has to be gone through and assessed, right? But I mean, it is sitting there. Because development in Innishon was stalled for years and years and years and years because the site wasn't able to be found.
Yeah.
And yet we're here in Milford with the site available.
Yeah.
At no cost to the state either, which is quite remarkable. For now, Louise McLarnon, on behalf of Scullmore at Milford Parents Association, Gormahigut, thank you so very much. And Father Stephen Gorman, Chair of the Board of Management of Scullmore at Milford, thank you. And I think they're very lucky, actually, Father, to have someone in your position advocating so strongly on their behalf. It doesn't happen all the time, but when you can get the board of management and the teachers singing completely off the same hymn sheet, I think it's very, very effective.
And Greg, we want to thank you here at Highland Radio for giving us this opportunity this morning, and we really appreciate all that you do for us and for many other topics here in Donegal. God bless you.
You can come back on anytime. Thank you for that. Anything to say, Louise?
No,
anyway. Listen, both of you, thank you very
much.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more
much,
shortly. Greg. Vincent Jennings is CEO of Convenience Stores and Newsagents Association. Thanks for your time, Vincent. Sorry for delaying you there. I do appreciate it. We're talking about a warning from retailers, a pandemic of crime. What have your members been telling you, Vincent?
Thanks, Greg. It's not us who's using the word pandemic. It's actually the Gardaí themselves. The superintendent is actually using that word, that there's a pandemic of retail crime. And it's not just shoplifting. It's an increase in assaults. It's an increase in burglaries. It's an increase in extortion. It's an increase in insurance frauds, in scams, in various scams, and in an increase in internal theft, all borne out by a survey carried out by the trade magazine Shelf Life, which showed just extraordinary levels of criminality that's being affected upon retailers and abusive behaviour towards staff. And it just has to stop.
A lot of the key findings talk really to a sense that they're out on their own there, that there aren't Gardaí visible. And if Gardaí are called, that most feel the response time is not satisfactory. So there's a sort of a sense of isolation there, I'm getting the impression.
There is. I mean, it's a lonely place behind a counter anyway, to be, believe it or not. But it is even more lonely when you've got somebody inside in the store who's acting in a threatening and abusive fashion. What are you supposed to do? I mean, can you detain them? Do you detain them? If you do, I mean, what's going to happen? So, it's just we're not satisfied with the level of response from the Gardaí. And though they are doing an absolutely brilliant job by and large and have brought to task a number of large criminal gangs, you've still got the feral youths. You've got people from different minorities who are just causing mayhem. We've got people going through the countryside, robbing left, right, and centre, and there just doesn't seem to be enough of a reaction to it.
And the losses aren't insignificant. I beg your pardon. The losses aren't insignificant either.
It's emotional as well.
Yeah, of course. But even let's just focus on the financials. Over a third talk of financial losses in excess of €10,000. Now, we know how difficult it is to be in business, particularly now. Yeah. Very few businesses could absorb that additional loss to revenue.
Well, one man has already lost for his number of sites over 250,000 last year. Another very large fuel retailer has admitted the level of drive-offs exceeded €1 million. €1 million in drive-offs. I mean, that's not sustainable. I mean, the prices go up as a result, and the staff morale is at its lowest point.
Yeah, I saw yesterday, and I've never seen it before, chickens with security markers on them. You know, that's where we're at now. High-value meat with, you know, like you'd see in an electrical shop with your toasters and ovens and stuff.
Sure.
We're seeing it in retail on chickens and other food prices. And obviously, too, what happens is if there is a lack of enforcement, a lack of Garda present, Vincent, that means people think they've got free rein. So what happens is the problem actually worsens. It doesn't even stagnate because they see it as a crime they can get away with.
No, it's growing. It's growing. And it's growing in the Northwest. In fact, you know, of the latest stats that have come out from the Gardaí, the Northwest is showing one of the greatest levels of increases of retail crime.
Okay, Vincent, listen, thank you very much for that. That's Vincent Jennings, CEO of Convenience Stores and News Agents. We are going to take, that's where we have to leave it for today, by the way.